to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 23, 2020. Sudan's transitional government appoints civilian governors.
The appointment of civilian governors at this crucial time is a real beginning of change in the states. We've been talking for the last 10 months that there is no change in the states. This is the beginning.
And the United Nations wants South Sudanese authorities to reopen schools during the COVID-19 pandemic.
If the schools are not reopened timely, there is a big risk of not having all the enrolled children again back to school, which will increase the number of out-of-school children in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok has appointed civilian governors, including two women, to run the country's 18 states. The new governors have replaced caretaker military governors appointed by military leaders who ousted President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. Hamdok says the appointment of the civilian governors completes the structures of the transitional government in Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Addressing news conference in Khartoum last night, Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok said the appointment of civilian governors completes the structure of Sudan's transitional government.
The appointment of civilian governors at this crucial time is a real beginning of change in the states. We've been talking for the last 10 months that there is no change in the states. This is the beginning. I want to appeal to all our forces for freedom and change to collaborate with the newly appointed governors so that they are able to achieve real change in the states.
Hamdok says he held lengthy discussions with different political forces in the country before naming the governors, which include two women. Professor Amal Muhammad Izzeddin Osman was appointed governor of Northern State and Amna Ahmed Al-Mekki, the governor of River Nile State.
We've put a lot of efforts at the executive body in consultation with the forces for freedom and change to create a situation where women are allowed to be appointed as governors to preserve the balance with regard to women participation and make their participation greatly satisfactory.
Sam Imbrator, a resident of Al Janina town of West Darfur State, welcomes the move to appoint female governors, but says in Arabic via WhatsApp that the five governors of war-torn Darfur region have an uphill battle ahead of them.
There is an issue of social peace, peaceful coexistence, and rebuilding social fabric among different communities across Darfur states. So as citizens of Darfur, we welcome the appointment of civilian governors so much.
Muwadda al-Mubarak, a resident of Khartoum's Sahafa neighborhood, calls the appointment of two female governors a good start toward achieving political reforms in Sudan.
Women are starting to contribute in governance, and to be capable to participate in such a big and huge deal, I would say it's like a good, very good start. So I'm very satisfied and happy with it.
It is not clear when the newly appointed governors will be sworn in. Sudanese states have been ruled by caretaker military generals since April last year. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The leader of the rebel group Sudan Liberation Movement says his group rejects Wednesday's appointments of state governors by Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. Mene Arkominawi says Sudan's transitional government should first focus on achieving peace in the country. Minawi says some political parties in Khartoum have dominated government positions, adding that rebel movements in Darfur, Southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states have been excluded in the governor's appointments. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Sudan Liberation Movement leader Mini Arko Minawi tells South Sudan in Focus his group had no role in the selection of governors and is particularly concerned about those appointed to Darfur's five states and the Blue Nile and South Kordofan states.
The ongoing positions of the SRF or SLM is rejecting the any appointing and resignations of the parties affiliated people in the regions, especially in the regions those the the violence regions like Darfur and two areas and eastern side as well, because any quota, the political quotas, if is adopted as this manner, I think the situation will jeopardize and also increase the instability in the areas.
In a televised news conference yesterday, Prime Minister Hamdok said he made the appointments in order to fulfill the demands of Sudanese citizens who held massive rallies across the country, which led to the ouster of longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. Minnawi says Hamdok was pressured by political parties in the Forces for Freedom and Change coalition to appoint governors before reaching a peace deal with Sudanese rebels who wanted a voice in the selection of governors.
Those demonstrating in June, they prioritize the peace should be done as the first step, and then everything should be follow the peace. But who put those pressures on Prime Minister? They are the political parties. The same political parties monopolize the situation and the political situation in Sudan, and also by the chance of their presence in the center, they got a lot of privilege, historical privilege, and those they are trying to monopoly and also maintain their own privilege. The peace should be prioritized.
Minnawi says the transitional government is making the same mistake of previous administrations, failing to listen to the people of Darfur, South Kordofan and Blue Nile states before announcing key government positions.
The way of taking these decisions right now is not the positive things, and I think this is the positions of the SLM up to now. Especially by this time before the peace, because they are following the same steps, and the political parties, they abused the revolutionary results by taking the quotas.
Sudan's Sovereign Council and the Council of Ministers were appointed in August and September last year, but appointments of state governors and the national legislature were delayed until a peace deal was reached with the rebel movements. Sudanese political analyst Abdulmanam Himmat agrees that achieving peace must be the top priority, but says governors should have been appointed from the start.
Appointing the state governors has been postponed or delayed until an agreement has been signed with struggle armed movements. It was not valid opinion, so it would have been better to appoint the state governors and then start the negotiation.
Sudan's constitutional document states that the transitional government must work seriously to achieve peace within the first 6 months of its term. Peace talks with the rebels began in September of last year, but have yet to yield a final peace deal. Himmat says political leaders must strive to attain lasting peace for all Sudanese citizens.
Reaching, or let us say achieving peace agreement, must not be linked or connected to positions in the government, but it is better to be linked to the fulfillment of demands.
Last week, the transitional government and the rebel coalition, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, started what they call the final round of peace talks in Juba to work out security arrangements between their forces. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on politics, the new governor of Jonglei State is calling on armed youth from Bor and Akobo counties who are fighting in Greater Pibor Administrative Area to return home. The governor says he will strengthen the rule of law in the area and ensure that cattle raiders are punished. He says he will use any available resources to empower the police to provide security. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Governor Dinay Chakor, who was nominated by the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says he will talk to armed youth from Bor and Nuer communities to ensure that they end the fighting in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
Right away, I'm going to be making some calls and trying to talk to the youth leaders and the groups and trying to ask them to come back. And so, you know, the lone youth, the poor youth, they have home that they left from. And they have village chief, they have sub-chief, you know, that you talk to them even when they are there. You know, there are these satellite phone call that they're talking to people even here in Europe. They talk to people from there. And so, you know, I'm going to add my voice to the calling them to come back. And I'm sure they will come back.
Once the youth have returned to their home villages, Shakur says his administration will begin engaging them in an approach which he says will be different from those of previous governors and administrators.
I want to make sure that I engage the youth themselves. I'm sure that we'll bring them to the table where they can also engage with the youth that they are fighting on the other side. So that, you know, you never know. They might surprise us. They might have some demand that we're not meeting, that we have not been meeting. And so it would be better for us to hear and then bring it all the way up to the politicians.
While engaging youth from all sides involved in the intercommunal fighting in peaceful dialogue, Shakur says he will also strengthen the rule of law to make sure Jonglei State citizens are protected.
We have to work together with all our law enforcements, all our security organs. All of them must make sure that their number one priority is to protect the citizens of Jonglei State. The police, the national security, the army is also there for them. And I believe that we will have honest discussion and see exactly, you know, where our security can come in and actually, you know, protect innocent life.
Governor Shakur has also pledged to fight government corruption, which he says robs state resources, leaving security forces without the resources they need to do their work.
Whatever little resources that goes back to Jonglei must be used in a way that it goes to where it's supposed to be. And it goes in the way that actually prioritize peace, prioritize prosperity, making sure that we have food at the table for our citizens.
It is only when there is food for all citizens that peace and security will be achieved in Jonglei State, said Shakur. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Ugandan musician is running for presidency in his country. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas, maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Ugandan musician turned opposition leader Robert Kyagulanyi has officially launched a political party for his People Power Movement to run in the next year's election. The National Unity Party plans to file Kyagulanyi, known by his stage name Bobby Wine, for the presidency. For VOA News, Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Mm-hmm. After 3 years of working under the banner of the People Power Movement, Bobi Wine on Wednesday launched a political wing named the National Unity Platform. Wine says this comes after countless failed attempts to register the People Power Movement as a political party.
We are unveiling the National Unity Platform as the political wing of the People Power Movement. The National Unity Platform is a duly registered political organization with the Electoral Commission, and the symbol is the umbrella. We have no plans of establishing a military wing. Our military wing is the People Power Movement, and our weapons are our words and our ideas, not arms of destruction and violence.
Since the formation of the People Power Movement 3 years ago, a number of legislators, including members of the ruling National Resistance Movement and Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, have allied with People Power. Last week, President Yoweri Museveni met some of his party members who had allied with Wine's movement, and they apologized for straying from the party. Nambeshe John, a member of the ruling party who allied with PPM and did not attend the meeting, says he is happy People Power Movement now has a political wing that will enable him to stand for the next general elections.
We have been labeled rebels just because of the removal of presidential age limit when we voted against it. Moreover, that was a decision of the people. So I am not one who is about again to go into a marriage with NRM despite the huge resources they have, despite the power they have.
Political analyst Mathias Simpuga says the formation of the National Unity Platform is a whole new start for politicians.
It's now going to give confidence to the fence sitters to finally make a decision whether they are going to follow their old conflicted political groupings or are going to finally take a decision and make a tough choice to work with People Power, either directly as members of the organization or in a memoranda.
NRM spokesman Rogers Mulindo says the formation of a political wing by People Power is no threat to them.
People Power is not a threat to NRM. And I really wonder why politicians of mature reasoning would really say we are going to pick forms from People Power. Because they don't have the structures. It's more of a movement on media, but at the grassroots they are not there.
Currently, all political parties in Uganda are carrying out nominations for party primary elections ahead of the 2021 general elections. Wine is being viewed as one of the top contenders against Museveni, who picked up his nomination forms on Monday. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
In South Sudan, two UN agencies are asking South Sudanese authorities to reopen schools across the country. UNICEF and UNESCO says children and schools are not the drivers of the pandemic across the country. The head of UNICEF in South Sudan says the risks of keeping schools closed outweighs the health risk caused by the pandemic. The two agencies also claim that keeping children out of school for a long period exposes them to physical, emotional, and sexual violence. Uganda, Sudan, Kenya, and Ethiopia have closed schools to protect children from COVID-19. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
In a joint editorial issued on Tuesday, UNICEF and UNESCO argue that while it is important to protect children from COVID-19, children and schools are not the main drivers of the epidemic. The two agencies note that there are already 2.2 million children out of school across South Sudan, and that the longer schools are closed, the less likely the children are to return to school. Tap Raj Pan is the UNESCO education chief in South Sudan.
If schools are not reopened timely, there is a big risk of not having all the enrolled children again back to school, which will increase the number of out-of-school children in South Sudan. We also have acquired a new knowledge that now indicates that children are not that much in risk compared to the adult and elderly people. This new knowledge allows us to advocate today worldwide for the reopening of the schools, including in South Sudan.
Pan also says research shows children are less at risk of contracting the virus compared to adults. In addition, Dr. Mohamed Ayoya, The UNICEF representative in South Sudan argues keeping children out of school for long periods of time exposes them to physical abuse and other types of violence.
We have seen this during Ebola in West Africa, that their exposure to physical, emotional and sexual violence increase. Their mental health deteriorates and they become more vulnerable to child labor, and they are less likely to break out of the cycle of poverty.
More worrisome, says Ayoya, is that girls who are out of school for a long time usually do not return. All South Sudanese schools are closed, so most education projects aimed at helping the education ministry strengthen its learning system have been put on hold. Ayoya says most vulnerable children, especially in rural areas, depend on school feeding programs to get their daily meals. And closed schools means more children will be malnourished in an already food insecure country.
We have no other interest in South Sudan other than the interest of children. So reopening the schools for us is only and for the interest of the children of South Sudan and to make sure that the elite of tomorrow's South Sudan, the leaders of tomorrow's South Sudan, are actually being provided with the opportunities to be trained, to be capacitated, to be skilled, so that they take forward the development of this country.
Health Ministry spokesman Dr. Toi Loi says no one knows when the virus will be under control and children can safely return to school.
It is not yet a decision, but there is a technical team actually between the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Higher Education to keep monitoring the trend of the infection in the country and at the same time see what can be done to resume with some classes within the context of COVID-19 and adhering to the preventive measures.
Juba parent Philip Lokudu says he has seen children in his Gudele neighborhood turn to illegal activities like joining outlaw groups that attack each other with machetes and knives when they are not in school.
I'm seeing a lot of students are really getting a lot of difficulties in staying at home, and they are joining maybe other groups that may pull them out from the schools. So opening the schools will be of more advantage to the children and the teachers at the same time, because it may keep them busy in the schools.
South Sudan shut down its schools in March to curb the spread of coronavirus, leaving millions of school-aged children at home. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on COVID-19, face covering are now compulsory in the lockdown Australian city of Melbourne as the COVID-19 crisis intensifies in that part of the country. Residents can only leave their homes for work, study, exercise and other essential business. Australia has had 12,428 confirmed coronavirus infections and 126 deaths. Phil Massa reports from Sydney.
The face covering order is the first of its kind in Australia, which has recorded more than 500 new cases of COVID-19 in the past 24 hours. It's the single biggest daily increase since the pandemic began. Most have been detected in the southeastern state of Victoria. Outbreaks have been reported at more than 40 nursing homes, and several prisons have been put into lockdown. Bandanas, scarves and handkerchiefs are all acceptable, as the people of Melbourne are ordered to cover their faces outdoors. Residents are being given official advice on how to make their own masks from clothes and shopping bags. Associate Professor Philip Russo is from Monash University.
It's not an exact science because we're still learning about this every day. We know that it's transmitted through close contact, so physical distancing is our first action in our prevention. And when physical distancing can't be maintained, then that's when masks can come into consideration.
As the crisis continues, travel between Victoria State and other parts of Australia is being heavily restricted and more stringent border controls put in place. About 2,400 new COVID-19 cases have been reported in the past week across Australia. It is a significant number. Since the pandemic began, almost 12,500 infections have been diagnosed. The spike in cases is undermining Australia's previous successes in tackling the virus. This week, a judicial inquiry began into how infected travellers returning to Australia from overseas could have spread the disease while in mandatory quarantine in Victoria. The hearing was told that many recent infections in the state could be linked to breaches in hotel security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Party People by Russ Corby.
Lovers, lovers, yeah.
Party people, if you're ready, say yeah. Oh. Party people, if you're ready, say yeah. Oh. Party people, if you're ready, say yeah. Oh. Party people, if you're ready, say yeah. I met this lady down in the dance hall. She was looking good, looking fine, pretty, good looking. I said, pretty lady, tell me your name. Where you living and where you coming from? I want to know you. Oh, pretty lady, I want to talk to you. To keep you down in my heart every day and night. Whiny, 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 give me all the diny, diny, diny. Give me all the whiny, whiny, whiny. Give me all the diny, diny, diny. Oh, give me all the shaky, shaky, shaky. Give me all the dancey, dancey, dancey. Wanna give me all the shaky, shaky, shaky. Give me all the dancey, dancey, dancey. And when you come and dance, all you have to find a pretty. All you have to find a pretty girl to dance with. You hear me? And when you come and dance, all you have to find a pretty girl to dance with. You hear me? And when you come and dance, all you have to find a pretty girl to dance with. You hear me?
I'm a look, I'm a jock, I'm a look, I'm can't see. No other woman pretty like you. I'm a look, I'm a jock, I'm a look, I'm can't see. No other woman pretty like you. Touch me in my heart, I feel so nice. Touch me in the day, me feel I right. Kiss me in the night, me feel okay. Touch me every time, I feel I ready. Oh, pretty girl, come give me the love, eh. Oh, Lordy, Lordy, no. Lordy, no.
We've been listening to Russ Corby with the song Party People. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
You hear me? And when you come and dance, all you have to find a pretty girl to dance with.